So I'm Mario Pasquato. I'm a graduate student at the University of Pisa, and I'm working with Michele Trenti and Guido De Marchi, Cole Miller, and Enrico Vesperini here. So what I'm going to talk about today is a way to fingerprint the presence of intermediate mass black holes in globular clusters with an indirect method based on mass segregation. And finding intermediate mass black holes, which, by the way, well, are 10 to the second, 10 to the fourth solar masses black holes, which are expected to be found in global clusters, is a difficult enterprise, as you surely know. And before, before saying that one of those has been really detected, we must be careful and require at least detailed proper motions in the centers of globular clusters. And this may be difficult to do because there's 100 globulars all over the place. And we want to narrow down the list of candidates before going to such an extent to pin down the presence of intermediate mass black holes in this expensive telescope, expensive way. So then, we are going for indirect tracers. What I'm focusing on is an indirect tracer based on mass segregation. Mass segregation is a phenomenon which goes on the relaxation, two-body relaxation time scale in globular clusters and in stellar systems which have a spectrum of stellar masses. Simply, the heavier stars fall towards the center, and the lighter stars move to the outskirts, where they eventually preferentially evaporate from. And this phenomenon has been shown to happen with n-body simulations. And it can also be shown that the presence of an intermediate mass black hole quenches mass segregation, that is, reduces the degree of mass segregation that we expect in such a system. This effect can be measured in globular clusters, provided we have detailed star counts. And for what I'm concerned, we will define a mass segregation indicator as the mean mass of main sequence stars at a given radius minus the value of the mean value of main sequence mass of stars at half light radius. Okay, so we can predict this quantitative measurement of mass segregation using n-body simulations. And what we do is precisely that. We run a large set of n-body simulations, 16 to 32 kiloparticles, without softening, and with a realistic description of the galactic tidal interaction. Half of the simulations contain an intermediate mass black hole, which is 1% of the total mass, and half do not. So we can plot them in this plane, which is our indicator of mass segregation, mean main sequence mass, against the radius measured in units of the half mass radius. We get two different behaviors. So the red shaded area is the 2 sigma confidence contour for intermediate mass black hole simulations, while the blue one is for without intermediate mass black holes. As you may see, we get much more mass segregation as expected for simulations with an intermediate mass black hole, without an intermediate mass black hole in them. And what if we then want to overplot to these observational results? Well, we took NGC 2298, which is a small cluster, is well relaxed, just because it's small. And this gives us an almost one-to-one ratio of simulated particles to stars, and that's good. And it fits well within an ACS field, and we have star counts how to twice the half-light radius, and a good completeness, for stars of 0.2 solar masses, we go to 50% completeness in the center. So we're pretty sure about what we're doing with this data. When we overplot the observed mass segregation curve on the simulations, we get the observational data fit well within the blue region, that is, are compatible with simulations which do not contain an intermediate mass black hole, but they are not compatible with the simulations which do contain an intermediate mass black hole. In particular, here, this plot, in this plot, the red area is made by using all the simulations with different IMFs, different binary fractions, which contain an intermediate mass black hole. So we can we are very confident in excluding these. We can put an upper limit at the 3 sigma level of 300 solar masses on the IMDH mass. But we run an even more stringent test because we took all the snapshots of all simulations containing an intermediate mass black hole, so at different dynamical times. We put all these snapshots together and took the upper envelope of all the snapshots. And what we get is, in the small inset here, the axes are the same. Even this very stringent test rejects the presence of an intermediate mass black hole in NGC 2298. But what we get here is based on no assumptions on how the IMF or the present-day IMF in NGC 2298 is. What if we think about the present-day mass function of NGC 2298? It turns out that our N-body simulations can reproduce the present-day mass function of NGC 2298, the observed global mass function in the main sequence stars, can reproduce it pretty well in the case of no black hole for a Miller-Escalo IMF when the cluster has lost approximately 70% of its mass due to tidal stripping. This is a very important result because then we can look for another constraint on the validity of our method. We can, given this, the simulations without an IMDH, these particular simulations which match the mass function should accurately predict NGC 2298 mass segregation profile, and they do. What we get here is that we can actually predict the observational mass segregation profile with these simulations to within one sigma. You see that there is two contours. The dashed one is the one sigma contour. So we can predict mass segregation very well. And in this case, that is, using the information on the mass function, we can reject to an even higher degree the presence of an intermediate mass black hole in NGC 2298. So coming to the conclusions, well, this is not just a negative result. We're not just excluding the presence of an intermediate mass black hole in NGC 2298, but we also show that the method works, so it's ready to be applied wherever star counts are there, detailed star counts are there, and show that we can predict using N-body simulations both the mass function and the mass segregation behavior of real globular clusters observed. Okay. So before finishing, for people who didn't have a look at the Monday 14 discussion, remember to have a look at my paper. And I can talk with you about this later. So thank you for your attention.
What is the mass of 20?
It's 50,000 solar masses, 30,000. It depends because, of course, you have to. I mean, depends on the model you fit to it, but it's quite small.
Yeah. So, what do you assume about stellar mass black holes in these clusters? Because
I would guess that a lot of the things that IMVH can do, a binary of two stellar matched black holes could do if it was close enough.
Yes, true. To some extent, if you put large stellar mass black holes, you get the same behavior. But in this case, there were no stellar, I mean, no large stellar mass black holes.
That is not correct.
That's fine.
All the simulations contain the stellar mass black holes in the range from 5 to 10
yes.
stellar
okay.
masses.
Okay.
And those were obtained by taking an initial IMF up to 100-150 stellar masses,
okay.
then doing an instantaneous step of stellar evolution mm-hmm. To match an observed turnoff of 0.8 stellar masses.
Okay.
So we retained retained all the neutron stars.
Okay. So you take the neutron stars and the black holes?
Yeah. And the black holes.
Okay.
So we have multiple black holes, multiple stellar mass black holes to start with in both the simulations with and without an IMVH.
Okay.
We have noted that in a couple of simulations with no IMVH, 10-10 solar mass black hole binary was formed. Mm-hmm. And while the binary survived, there was still size quenching of mass segregation that was approaching that of the IMVH.
Okay, so it comes close to doing
it
the same
comes
thing,
close,
but you find that they aren't very close.
But if you wait long enough, the stellar mass black holes go out of the system.
Okay.
Eventually means after how many relaxation times do you
These results, well, not this one for 20, the general plot. This plot was obtained between 7 and 9 relaxation times. And the stellar black holes are basically all gone, or they are not important for quenching mass segregation.
Okay.
So maybe it's just once that there is no longer the binary.
What was
your initial segregation?
How soon they're all gone? No, zero initial segregation.
How soon they're all gone, the stellar mass black holes, in these simulations?
Let's say five relaxation times, and most of the stellar mass black holes.
So how
is
the stellar evolution done in the simulation?
There is an instantaneous step of stellar evolution at the beginning of the simulation.
There's no continuous stellar evolution.
There is no continuous. There is dynamics only once we have initialized simulation with this evolved mass function.
So you're starting with an analytical simulation with an evolved population, but you retain all the binaries?
Yes, correct.
And no binaries.
It depends.
10% binaries in a few runs.
In this plot contains also binaries.
The plot shows results from the binaries. Binaries are treated as observed versus voodoo. So they are projected. We are taking only the total luminosity of the binary, and we are projecting the binary on main sequence because we assume that observers with star counts don't see the binary. Reality, one could do better and try to model the double main sequence, but that was not necessary.
Is there a velocity dispersion measurement for this cluster, integrated or anything?
Oh, I don't think so.
There are very, very, I pulled out some very few scan measurements. There's not a good.
Yeah, I know, so I was wondering if you
want. No, there are measurements, however, of certain stars, and you could.
I'm just wondering if you put the upper limit that you get at 300 solar masses, because I'm guessing it must be a lowish velocity dispersion.
Yeah, very low, very low.
So how far off the black hole it might be? That's what I'm asking. Because the far upper limits tend to be around. None of them is really far off. So I want to see if this one is really.
The signal's probably pretty far off anything that's measured too. Right?
Oh no,
so,
granted.
Yeah.
But you always, I mean, that's what you do.
Yeah.
So that's where then we are asking for a measurement.
I'm just curious if it's up or not.
So do you actually believe those bumps there? Those your
you mean in the data?
No, yeah. Because the level at which you are actually ruling out the IMVH is the same as the level at which those bumps go within there. red stripes. I just
Wait.
Error bars here are on the data.
Okay, so I can tell you how the error bars were, and what you I think the most important source of error you have here is basically the binning error, because you are counting stuff. So we run a detailed Monte Carlo bootstrap resampling to quantify the error bars.
So is that included in the inner? Because that's a bigger problem, the innermost bin. So is that effect included in the innermost bin too? So have you actually bumped it up by?
Okay, well, you see the error bars?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so they are not the dominant effect, because this is already the 2 sigma envelope. That's the error in the simulations, which is dominant.
How many sigma are your error bars?
This one are 1 sigma error bars, while the simulations show 2 sigma. So I don't think we are dominated by the noise in the observations there. And we also tried different kinds of binnings and normalization there, and it seems pretty stable. So I would say this is a physical effect.
Well, that's smooth in the error bars, right? If you have about 20 data points, you expect 1-2 sigma point.
There's not one. There's more than one, right?
All the other ones are 1 sigma. And
I think in the external part you may expect some effects due to tidal stripping or something. And in the very external.
What's the radial velocity of this thing? Could it be what we heard in the last talk, projected on the lumps that you're just seeing?
In your say red
strip, yes.
Do you see any effect of what is your initial binary fraction?
So we're running simulations with both. We have simulations without primordial binaries and simulations with a 10% primordial binary fraction.
Do you see anything like if you have binaries, then they are in certain region of the strip? And
yeah,
is there any difference between the runs in this plane?
There is a difference. In fact, you get this size of the shaded area because there is the simulations with and without binaries or with different IMFs have different, slightly different behaviors. But we don't see a very strong effect here because we are using a differential measurement.
Excuse me. If you look at the Gill et al. Paper where we plot simulations with and without binaries separately, you see that the simulations with primordial binaries have overall slightly less mass segregation, all other parameters being equal. And this is because if you have dark remnants associated with a main sequence star, or simply a lower mass star that you don't see, you tend to bring observed low mass sources further in than with no binaries. And for 2298, this is not going to be a major problem because the observed binary fraction in the core is 5-10% at most. And
so
when
observed, that doesn't mean you can ignore it.
No,
we're not ignoring it.
We use these simulations at 10% overall population of primordial binaries, and that is included in the plot. If you start with 10% primordial binaries, over mass segregation of the binaries will bring the binary fraction in the core around 40%.
It's 30-40. Yeah.
But the fact that you don't see more than 5%.
So the overall fraction of binaries is probably a few percent.
So to put it simply, you can't hide the IMBH using binary.
Oh yeah, sure. Following up from a service thing, just generally, I'd be interested in seeing that sort of plot with no binaries and with binaries, just from a general interest point of view. Worried about disproving whether there's an IMBH in
in this cluster or not. But I think it's very good that you're including the binary effects. And so I was wondering whether you plan to do simulations with ongoing stellar and binary evolution?
No, we actually have simulations which are running already, but you mean with the...
So the dynamical binaries, where you do the one step.
Yeah, well, mainly that's justified because the main and most of stellar evolution should happen on a rather short time scale with respect to what we're looking for now.
It may not change the results much, but I still think it's interesting because you get that ongoing interaction between the binary population and the white dwarfs that you're producing.
That could be
mass segregation would be good to
see.
You do get.
Well, after 2-3 billion years, you don't expect very much happening in terms of stellar evolution. Either you think the stellar evolution is affecting the structure of the cloud early in the cloud, which
you've still got movement of white dwarfs and binaries within the cluster. And probably a secondary effect.
Yeah, that's
what I think. It's not a criticism, I'm just interested whether planning on looking at.
It's technically relatively easy to run stellar evolution and start from the bulk mass function. So
I understand. I was just wondering, was that planned or not?
We are planning to run a large set of simulations using GPUs. With Embody 6, with Starlab and Sapporo library. So we might include a few live stellar evolutions in those lines. My expectation is that will not change the results. The impact on the initial mass function is much larger than keeping stellar evolution ongoing. And there is not much difference whether you start from a Salpeter or a Miller and Scalo, or even if you wait long enough that the mass function has completely changed sign. There is a huge difference, but when you normalize, and you look at what is the difference in the main sequence mass between the center and the half mass radius, there doesn't seem to be a very big difference.
This is robust against the difference in the EMF, because, well, maybe I should have been more clear when defining it, but we are taking the difference between the mean main sequence mass at a given radius and its value at RH. So the bulk of the effects of the EMF go away. We just are left with the segregation effect, mainly.
So just to try and understand what Eva is doing with this, so your statement is essentially that if you have the IMBH, the inner orbits are highly radially anisotropic. Right? So,
sorry?
Because you're kicking them out. So they will be radially. The reason you don't have mass segregation is because you're kicking things out. So the orbits should be radially anisotropic when you're in the innermost regions.
No, wait.
The relaxation time at the center is so small that you get isotropy in the center.
No, I'm talking about individual orbits. I'm talking about the individual orbits of objects.
You get a kick from the black hole, so you are on a radial orbit. But then the stellar density you are highly collisional, so you redistribute that.
So my question was going to be: does it remain highly? Of course, it doesn't. That means you answered my question. Whether the innermost ones are expected to be more radial?
A central massive object introduces a little bit of tangential anisotropy.
Very small.
The particles which are about to be ejected, the new ejected, this population of.
What fraction of them are going to be, and whether you can whether you would predict more of
the angular method diffusion times goes very short. Not shorter than the EMBH.
The one testable prediction for the presence of an EMBH is that you expect somewhat larger number of high velocity escaping stars. So if you kick them fast enough that they don't have time to interact with the other stars that are going out on the home. There have been searches for high velocity stars in globular clusters with rich speed within the past cycles. Time was granted, but I don't think that any results came out.
You know the famous radio velocity searches that come from, right?
I was now this was PI was a Drew Keir.
Many years ago, if you looked in radial velocity, there are velocity outliers in a number of clusters. Milan.
Milan, 47 top, we had a giant.
There's a problem because people do velocity cutoffs, and they actually bias the table of velocity distribution. But Peterson's also remember this a number of years ago. Scott Adair is a fatter than expected high velocity tail.
And we know those are members, or we don't know those.
No, members. They're right on top of the core cluster. Core of the cluster.
Yeah, well, they could be.
Yeah, but 47 Tuck is right in front of the Magellan, the SMC, right? So.
Yeah, but that's a.
No, it's very different. Yeah, this is.
Yes.
Okay, so it's okay. So
it's 18 kilometers instead of 11.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's not. No, it's not.
3.5 segments.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank both our speakers for being here.